Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, everybody, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, I'm Kelly Wells, and we are going to talk about NXT for November 25th, 2020. Thanksgiving Eve used to be that Survivor Series would be on Thanksgiving Eve, but they gave that up after a few years. Anyway, we got NXT instead, and I dare say this was my favorite episode in kind of a while. Now, I know I'm comparing it against some really bizarre episodes that have been on lately, so maybe I'm overrating it, but we'll talk about whether I am or not. So, you can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. You can email our show at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com or call us at 515-605-9345. We've got three callers waiting on the line, so we're going to talk main event, and then we are going to go to the lines and start seeing what you guys saw and what you thought. Let me go ahead and talk main event. That was Kyle O'Reilly versus Pete Dunne in a ladder match. And the winner would, for his team at War Games, win the man advantage. So obviously we know the heel's going to win. The only question is how. This went 19 minutes and 40 seconds. That's a bit of a guess because we didn't get an opening bell, which has happened a couple times recently. And I'm not in love with that, but oh well. If the opening bell is the biggest problem, then I guess we're doing okay. Pete Dunne wins when a masked guy attacks Kyle O'Reilly and does something to him that was not nearly as big as the things that he recovered from. But what are you going to do? Takes O'Reilly out, and Pete Dunne suddenly remembers how to climb a ladder quickly, and he does so and wins the man advantage for the still unnamed bad guy team of four. It seems that it was Pat McAfee, who had earlier in the show said he would not be there tonight, was the person who attacked. He had the same hoodie and same mask. We didn't get confirmation that it was Pat McAfee. All the pieces fit, but I guess if they want to swerve us, they can give that team a fifth member, and that could be how they win at War Games. But I guess we'll find out. Tom Staupe, what did you think of the main event, and who are you anyway?
I am at Tom Staupe, and my favorite wrestling around Thanksgiving anecdote is that in the earlier seasons of Cheers, when they started to get enough of a budget that they could move away from the bar set, they went to Norm's house for Thanksgiving, and they were watching Hulk Hogan on TV, and it was at a time when Survivor Series would not have been on at the time that they were watching it. And I've mentioned that a number of times. I'm waiting for somebody to say, well, as a matter of fact, they syndicated an episode of blah, 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 and for it to check out. But I'm sure it's just a sitcom being a sitcom. As for the match, it just kind of makes you wish that there was more narrative and less gimmickry around Dunne versus O'Reilly, because these are guys that we know could have a classic program with one another. And yet here they're basically trying to end one another's careers with ladders for a War Games advantage that we know the heels always win anyway. And I felt that they tipped their hat as to how that win was going to happen earlier in the night with what you mentioned, showing Pat McAfee's radio show or podcast or whatever it is, when he said that he wasn't going to be there. And I'm like, all right, well, then he's going to be there and he's going to interfere in the match. Yes, you're right. They did not officially reveal that it was him, but the body type is the same. The mannerisms were the same. Even up on the ramp after he did his deed, he was doing the mocking UE gang symbol, which is the exact same way that he's done it in all of his promos. So, you know, thin shred of possibility that they've got a fifth wheel.
So why not show his face? It's
very bizarre, especially if you're going to go to the trouble of having him there when he's clearly got other responsibilities. But I will say that while I am in big picture down on this being how Dunne and O'Reilly have had their first major confrontation, I at least appreciated that throughout the night, the build to it was straightforward, because sometimes, especially now, it's refreshing and just effective, simple and effective to just be straightforward and just be like, yep, I'm going to go out there in the main event tonight and kick that guy's ass. And the other guy has his segment later and says, yep, I'm going to go out there in the main event and kick that guy's ass. And that was fine. So I at least appreciated that aspect to it.
Nate Lindberg, what about you?
Okay. The cat is back. So stop playing in my kitty litter. Ha, I'm back. Wow, that God, that was terrible. But yeah, I'm back after a week or two. I don't even remember how long I've been gone at this point, but I've been gone for a bit. So I'm glad to be back here. The main event, like Tom said, it was kind of, I wish there wasn't as much gimmickry around this because yeah, these two guys can go and they can go well. I would have rather kind of seen a contest where their technical wrestling ability was kind of put more on showcase. However, I don't know. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I kind of thought they had a pretty good use of ladders and weaponry here. I wouldn't say anything that I saw was necessarily unique, but I mean, I guess that's kind of hard to do with in 2020 in a ladder match with how many ladder matches have happened over the years. But it, I don't know. Like I said, I personally enjoyed it. The narrative going into War Games, I do feel like is, I don't want to say rushed because, I mean, obviously they've been kind of planting the seeds, I guess, in a way for this since like the Pat McAfee, Adam Cole feud sort of. But I know that obviously I would highly doubt that this was the plan all along due to, you know, different injuries and COVID and things like that. But in a way, I mean, you know, I guess they could kind of play it off that way if it wasn't. But one thing that both of you gentlemen missed is that we had both of the teams on those platforms behind the ring, you know, cheering on their individual members in the match. And after the masked guy appeared, it was only Birch and Lorcan standing there. They showed it a couple times, and Mac, and I'm glad they showed it twice because I wasn't sure the first time. But the second time, Pat McAfee was not standing.
Well, McAfee was never there because he was never going to be there tonight.
But he wasn't there with them?
No.
Nope.
Oh, goddamn. Okay, so I guess I missed. I was like, gotcha. I gotcha, but now, okay, never mind.
And they did show Undisputed Era checking on Kyle, right?
Did they show Undisputed after the match?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. I believe they did. Otherwise, it would be a very compelling theory, again, if the person who interfered did not have the exact same body type as Pat McAfee, a body type that nobody in Undisputed Era has, but it's a compelling, it would be a compelling theory otherwise.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. I like this match, but I had much the same feeling is that, this was so stiff and so raw for a match with no build. And they really, really went for it. These guys, That's the only way they know how to go. Kyle getting the singles push of his WWE career, but he won't survive it if he wrestles every match like this. So that was our main event. Heels get the advantage, as the heels are oft wont to do. So we are going to go to a call. We got a few. We're going to go to 615 first. 615, why don't you go ahead and let us know who you are and where you're calling from.
Yes, sir. Kelly, Tom, and Nate, it's Sean, VIP from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, man.
Doing all right, Sean from Tennessee. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Happy Thanksgiving to you all as well.
Thanks. It's, you know, just going to be the four of us in a house, but my wife's a really good cook, so I can live with it.
No, that's a you cannot argue with good cooking ever, so that's always good. Yeah, I wanted to say, first, the wrestling on tonight's show was really good all around. I enjoyed all the matches quite a bit, actually, because I haven't really been able to watch a full episode, I feel like, in a while, but I've been keeping up, you know, obviously what's been going on, and the wrestling was good. I'm with you guys. They worked their asses off. I mean, it was a heck of a match, but like you said, there was one, again, spot where Pete was going up the ladder, and of course, you know, Kyle's like, it seemed like he no-sold them. He didn't, but he did. He just got up there so fast to get back up there. And I'm like, all right, you got to sell that a little bit. I see why you had to get up there, because you're trying to stop him and you got to keep it going. But it was just like, I don't know, it's a little too quick. But I thought they worked really well. I thought it was good. I'm excited about War Games to see where they go. And I mean, Pete Dunne's just so good. I'm glad they turned him back heel to begin with, because he's a way better heel right now. And so that was cool. I wanted to go back to the Ember and Candice match, because it was really good. I know they had already had, I mean, I know Tony's been kind of heel overall lately, but where do you think they're going with her in the long term? Because I do think she's a better babyface. I do think it's better to play her heel, I guess, now in the COVID crowd and the, you know, just the people there, and there's no, like, main crowds. Because I think if there was a full crowd, I think they would cheer no matter what. Because they just – everybody likes her so much. And so to see her turn heel in this scenario, I like it a little better, but I'm still kind of leery. Where do you think they're going with that? Do you think they're going to have a long build? Do you think they're going to have her win the title sooner rather than later? Or – because I like her and Ember having a match at some point, because I think they work well and Ember's doing a good job right now. But where do you think they're going ultimately with Tony? Do you think they're – because I just don't know about her as a heel. I'm not a fan of it yet, but I'm willing to grow into it. I hope I can grow into it. What do you think?
So I'm not sure if you saw Tony as a heel before the pandemic hit, but she was working heel over on NXT UK before that. So so she had turned heel and had been heel for a few months. It was kind of a soft turn, a gradual turn. I don't remember exactly how it happened, but it was working fairly well, I'd say. You're right that she is the kind of person that gets cheered pretty well. But I from what I saw then, I think that she'll be able to pull it off. I don't know. It's with Pete Dunne, as you said, it's funny. He's so good on both sides of the aisle that when he's a face, you go, oh man, it's too bad we don't get to see heel Pete Dunne. And when he's a heel, you say, oh, his babyface act is so much fun. Like, you kind of want to, you wish you could get both at the same time. But yeah, I think that this is not a half bad way to reintroduce Pete Dunne, and was one of the really shocking turns. I was less surprised by the Storm turn tonight, only because they did have her working heel before the pandemic. So I was surprised she came back as a babyface. But now all of a sudden we got four heels and we're down to three women in the match. As for where I think they'll take her, I think she'll have a match with Io sooner than later. I'm not sure if she's the one who beats Io. She's not who I'd choose. I would still choose Candice, despite the fact that she's lost a couple of times. I just think Candice's heel act is so polished and so good, and she's capable of great matches with a lot of different kind of women. That's who I would still choose, with apologies to Dakota Kai, because that's what I want to see. But Candice goes over Ember 12:58 with the help of Tony Storm, and this is largely to set up War Games, Nate. Whoa, 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 whoa. Nate, stop talking. Nate, I'm getting nothing but feedback from you. You're gonna have to reset. Tom, is that the same thing you're hearing?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Nate, destroy your equipment and buy some new stuff and then join us back.
Are we? Nate is probably already thinking about it, but will we be able to stay on the call?
Right.
Connected?
Oh, that's true.
Maybe he'll have to call in.
Don't destroy all your equipment. But yeah, yeah, something will have to be done with your microphone. So, Tom, go ahead while we hope that.
Real quick, can you guys hear me okay? We can still go to Tom.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Go ahead first. Go ahead first.
Okay. All right. Cool. Sorry about that. That's what I get for using my backup mic, because I was too lazy to plug in my normal one that was across the room. Okay, Candice LeRae, Indy Hartwell. That's the match you're talking about, right?
Well, Indy Hartwell wasn't in it.
Candice LeRae and with Indy Hartwell and Ember Moon. That's what I've got written down. Guys, I've been going through a lot of stuff in my life. Bear with me. I like this match. I like the way that it was kind of crafted together because the odds are completely stacked against Ember Moon. So the story, the story was there, where it was kind of like an underdog type of a match. You first start out with LeRae and Hartwell and just Ember Moon, involved in the match, and then obviously you get Kai and Gonzalez to come out. They start playing a major part in the match and interference, things like that. We've got Storm come out, and that was I wouldn't say it was necessarily a surprising swerve. I didn't see it coming, but at the same time, it wasn't like a, oh wow, like, especially where she's just been reintroduced. It's not, I wouldn't say it's uncommon, it's not uncommon for somebody to get reintroduced and then quickly turn. I mean, look at Santos Escobar, he debuted and quickly turned. So, like I said, it doesn't really necessarily surprise me. The Pete Dunne thing, like you said, Kelly, that was a much bigger shock to me than this particular swerve. The match itself, I did enjoy it. I liked the way it was built up. The fact that Rhea comes out, tries to help out, but they, nobody else from the babyface locker room came out to help, and I appreciated that. It's something that either A, the heels could play off of, like, ha, nobody wanted to come and help you guys, or, can certainly play into the story at some point. Don't know exactly how, but I personally like that little thing, little touch. As far as Toni Storm and where she's probably going to go, I've said this in the past, like, I think she has that it factor. She's got that marketability factor. She's got a good look to her. She's not the greatest wrestler in the world. I think we all agree on that, but she's, at least a halfway decent wrestler. I think they're going to probably, I wouldn't say they're probably going to go pretty far with her. I don't necessarily know if she's going to defeat Io if she goes up against her, but I have a feeling we're going to see that match probably sooner rather than later. But, who knows at the moment, that things changing so fast nowadays. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if we saw that. I just don't think that we would see her necessarily be the one to defeat Io unless they wanted her to then go up against or unless she was a transitional champion to go up against a face Ember Moon. I could see them doing something like that because we have talked about Moon in the past potentially, being a contender for a 2-time women's championship. So that's at least what I'm thinking.
Tom, women.
I am reminded by our audio issues of when I programmed alternative content for a movie theater, and the most popular program I ever put on was called 3 Stars in Berlin, starring Jonas Kaufman, Erwin Schrott, and Anna Netrebko. It was beautiful. The way Schrott sings the aria from Tosca is amazing, and what we just heard tonight was really what the seniors had blown into their hearing aids because we had audio issues. Thankfully, Nate, you were able to fix it. Thankfully, you were able to fix it much, much quicker than we were. Being patient to wait for that aria really was worth it. It's an incredible program. So I thought this was a huge win. Not only did Ember look great in the match, but as she has been doing lately, but Toni turning here on Ember. Okay, so Toni comes in on the exact same night as Ember. They're basically positioned in the exact same way, and that puts a ceiling on Toni. Now, that's just me speaking subjectively, because as I've said over and over again, I'm not a big fan of Toni Storm. But that's also what makes me optimistic about her as a heel, and why I was optimistic about her as a heel in NXT UK, because the things that I don't like about her are mostly her crowd pandering and when she, parts of her work that are playing to the crowd. It just feels so artificial to me. And I feel like that could just very, very easily translate into being effective for a heel because she comes off as very disingenuous anyway. So as a babyface, especially coming in on the same night as Ember, I thought she had that ceiling on her, and I did not view her as championship material, but sure, challenger material, and they did not go that route with her right away. So now, not only does Tony have a much higher ceiling on her, perhaps as a near future NXT Women's Champion, I agree with Kelly, probably not, but that is certainly in the cards now, but all due respect to Indy Hartwell, I've sung my praises of her before, although not, you know, not as well as Erwin Schrott. All due respect for her, to her. Now we have a more well-rounded heel team for the women, and now it is no longer a question of is it going to be Io or Rhea for the babyfaces. Now it's going to be Io and Rhea because Tony switching sides frees up that spot. Also, added to this, of course, we have the fact that Tony was going to get cheered on her return anyway, so they did that thing where they gave us about a month to be happy about her coming back before booing her. So that's just a big gush about what I thought was the best part of the show. I think this is a huge win all around, and especially puts Tony in a much more favorable position for her career.
Yeah, there's a lot of people you can't bring back as heels. So you got to, I mean, it's essentially the same thing they did with Pete, because they brought back Pete, even though they did it pretty quickly with him. They made hay with that storyline. You got to bring him back as a face because you know you'll get that response. And now they actually will get the response that that happens organically because they've got real people in the arena. All right. Well, Sean, did you have one more, or we could move on?
Yeah, no, I wanted to. I'm excited where they go. I'm with you, Kelly. Like, I do want Candice to be next, and that's the tough part about this women's division is it's so freaking deep. There's so much good talent to have right now, and it's like you want to see everybody get pushed, but only one or two people can get pushed, you know, in that way at the same time. So, I mean, I'm excited to see. But it leads me into Rhea Ripley, where I think they're obviously trying to build her back up, which I like. She had a fantastic match, obviously, last week against EO, just tremendous. And where do you think they're going with her? Because ultimately, I still believe at WrestleMania, she should have retained the NXT title. To me, there was no reason for Charlotte to win that title. There's absolutely no reason. I think that really hurt Rhea, and it's taken her this long to kind of catch back up and get ultimately where they're going to try to go. Where do you think they're ultimately going? Who's next for her? Because I want Rhea. She's too big of a star. Like, she needs to get back on track, you know, pretty quickly. So where do you think they're going with her?
So, Sean, I thank you for the call. That match, that Rhea versus Charlotte match, I go back and forth on because essentially what happened is that they chose – it wasn't even a matter of Charlotte. It was that they chose what they believed to be the brand over the star. And wrestling's always been at its best when you're looking out for the star. And that's what kind of – that's what gives me pause, even though I thought that there was some benefit to Charlotte in that particular role holding that championship. It's just too bad that it was Rhea who had to absorb that loss, because it would have made much more sense if it was like the plucky underdog babyface, who at the time they could have done it with somebody like Candice or Dakota because they were faces and they were that kind of babyface that could absorb that loss. Because you kind of expect them to. And we talked a lot on this podcast at the time about how even understanding the benefits of that potential championship run by Charlotte, as brief as it turned out to be, Rhea was – when a monster starts taking losses – it's really hard for them to continue to be a monster. As for where I think they're going with her, I still 100% believe that her saying "I'm here to stay" was a red herring. I think she will stay as long as War Games and maybe a little longer. But by the time Royal Rumble comes around, if she's not there, then Royal Rumble will be the night that I believe that she will be on the main roster for good, Tom.
So I think that the big question right now is who shows up to challenge Asuka on Raw first, Charlotte or Rhea? And I've made the argument that it should be Rhea because that's fresher. There's also the possibility that they show up simultaneously. I think a key reason to watch Raw two nights ago was to see the answer to that question. But they are still riding the Lana storyline. And even though that's not somebody that most people would suspect to be spoken of in the same ilk, that is the spot right now that Lana is holding, albeit in a much different way than Charlotte or Rhea would. So I think that that's probably the puzzle piece that we're waiting to be moved out of place right now. And it's, you know, if Rhea's going to be sticking around in NXT, may as well do something with her. For all I know, this was the plan, but it does seem like, you know, they still want to move her up sooner rather than later. I would argue possibly even sooner than Royal Rumble, although, you know, that's right around the corner. So even if it leads to keeping Rhea off of TV for a little while and then she shows up in the Rumble, that could be a good circumstance. But yeah, I believe that she is, you know, still, even after this week, not long for NXT at all. And just to roll her promo into it, if that's something that we can do here, I'm trying to remember it in the context of the show. I feel like this took place at a certain part of the show where it felt like they were trying to cram a bunch of stuff in there. And I just thought, okay, let me look at a silver lining here. There are through lines, and something that I always like on a Raw or a SmackDown or even a pay-per-view is when they have through lines. It's a story that's being told over the course of the night, not just in a single segment. We're not used to that happening on NXT as much because NXT has been changing its DNA, but with them being a two-hour show now and looking at different ways to hold the ratings, I appreciate the through lines here and telling the Women's War Games storyline throughout the night of the teams formulating. So I also think that they weren't trying to cover as much ground as they were when they did the same thing last week with Ruff, Gargano, and Priest. That felt a little bit more like, whoa, that was a month's worth of storytelling, not only at the wrong part in the story, but also all at once. So tonight was a little better. And I think the idea of Rhea's promo that, of course, got interrupted was that we weren't supposed to think that she was going to end up on a War Games team, which, of course, she still hasn't officially. But now she's officially wrapped up in that storyline. I think that we were supposed to be going into that clueless and wondering, is she going to announce that she's going up to Raw before getting interrupted? I think that's where we were supposed to be, even though it was all too obvious that was not going to be the case as of tonight. And Sean, I do appreciate hearing from you on a Wednesday. It's good to hear from you. So thanks for the call.
Okay. And Nathaniel, what do you think Rhea's going to do other than go full dominatrix, as my wife said when she saw her first show up tonight?
I mean, that's certainly, I guess, on the list of things that she could potentially do. Sure, why not? No, to be honest, I don't have a whole hell of a lot to add that you guys didn't already say. I feel like she's absolutely main roster bound. You know, and I've said this quite a few times on the show, is like after the WrestleMania match, I you said it best, I think, just now, is like they chose the brand over the star. They chose to kind of put the focus on NXT with Charlotte, not necessarily Rhea. And I think that really, at least in my eyes, that completely derailed her. And even though she's come back and she's seemed, you know, relatively strong, it just hasn't been the same for me. So, you know, I don't know, unless they were to give her another title run, which obviously at this point I really don't think is in the cards. You know, it certainly seems like she's kind of done what she needs to do in NXT. You know, where feel like all the Triple H media calls, you know, they've always gushed about Rhea Ripley from, you know, what you've told us, Kelly, what we've heard. So it wouldn't surprise me either if, you know, they want to take somebody like her and make her a bigger star on a bigger stage. It Yep. And I think it would be a good addition to really either main roster women's division. So yeah, I can certainly see it happening. Royal Rumble, like, you know, it is right around the corner. So I don't know. We always see debuts then, so it would make sense. If not, the night after Mania would certainly make sense too, if she was going to be off TV for a little bit. But I'm kind of on board with everything else you guys said.
I will say, though, that I'm constantly saying that people are going to debut at the Royal Rumble. So it's probably not worth much, because I have said many times Royal Rumble is the place for this to happen. I said that they should take Dominic Dijakovic and give him the diesel push, and instead he's T-Bar. So let's go again to the lines, the phone lines. It looks like we only got one left. You know, the other one, I saw the other call, the area code, and I think it might have been that person who accidentally called us from AEW the one time and said some weird stuff. So, I'm not sure. I'm sure it was the same area code, but I don't know it was the same person. This person, I'm sure, is Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, how you doing?
How y'all doing tonight?
How's it going, man?
Hey, doing all right.
What's up, dude?
Not too much. Well, I want to first start off talking about my guys showed up tonight. that was nice seeing them, and I can't wait till they put them in the tag team mix. They finally came over. So my first question, now that Grizzly Young Vets are here, what do you guys see them doing?
First of all, the second I saw them, I said, okay, I know what Darrell's first question will be. Because he's going to want to know about Grizzly Young Veterans. I, too, love the Grizzly Young Veterans. I love the act. I love that one of them is silent and one never shuts up. I love everything about him. And Zach Gibson, big, big board game fan, and I follow his board game Instagram as well as his regular one. So there you go. But it's weird timing, because we've got heel tag team champions, certainly a team that Zach and James have probably faced quite a few times. But I don't know how you use the Grizzled Young Vets when you've got these obvious heel champions. Are they going to move the championships to the Undisputed Era again and have Undisputed Era essentially be transitional champions? It's such a strange time for the Vets to come back. So, and there aren't exactly a lot of babyface teams for them to feud with. You've got Breezango, and I mean, you could do a little something with Drake and Killian Dane, although they are selling Dane's injury right now by having him off TV, so I don't know how long to expect that to happen. I assume they'll be back 2 weeks from now after we're back from TakeOver, and there's no longer any need for him to sell his injury. But that's a big question, and there's no obvious place to slot them right now, Nate.
No, there's really not. And that's actually, because, like, you know, you're just kind of going through some of the babyface teams, and like the only thing that I could come up with that is at least intriguing to me is doing some sort of a comedic transition with Drake Maverick and Killian Dane. I kind of forgot about, I wouldn't say I forgot about the injury, but I guess it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, because I haven't been on TV in a while. But I kind of forgot about that until you brought it up. But that's really the only thing that kind of really came to mind. They could drop him back to Breezango, I guess, but they've already done that rematch. So it's not really an intriguing thing for me. And I don't really like the idea of Undisputed Era being that transitional tag team. They certainly could do it, because, I mean, they would have, I believe at that point it would be a historic number of NXT title reigns. So, you know, they would have that bragging right leaving NXT when and if they do. But I don't know. As we've discussed plenty of times on the show, none of us really seem to like, these quick transitional champion swaps. Leon Ruff is kind of, I kind of like what they're doing with it, so I'm kind of giving it a little bit of a pass, you know, what they're doing with the North American title right now. But generally, I don't really want to see quick title runs. I like to see long, lengthy champions that builds up, you know, it builds up credibility. It builds up a monster. You use that belt as a tool, not necessarily as a prop. Yeah, I don't know. It's a little murky right now. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do unless there was some sort of new team that they were going to introduce or something. But as everything stands right now, it almost looks like they're going to have to wait a little bit before they get a shot at the NXT tag titles.
Tom, are they going to bring back Too Cool once more? Probably can't do that anymore.
Well, yeah, they can't do that.
Yeah.
Well, they could bring in Rikishi. He could come out of retirement.
That's true.
Oh, man. I laughed, and then I thought about it for a second and got sad.
I said I got sad because I had forgotten the most terrible part of that whole story.
I know it was just a plug for NXT 8 years back. Go VIP, everybody. Getting myself off of that. Right. Grizzled Young Veterans. This is the part of the show where they're just cramming stuff in. They don't give us full entrances for wrestlers anymore. They just crash from segment to segment. And tonight, for the most part, was actually better about that. I didn't mind most of the pace of tonight's show, and the matches didn't feel quite as breakneck, but they come back from whatever, I don't even remember the order of it, from Finn talking about kitty litter or whatever it was, into Ever-Rise in the ring, and immediately, a split second later, Grizzled Young Veterans show up, cut a little promo, and then that's it. Most of what I took from it was Kevin Owens being a big Ever-Rise fan on commentary. It just seemed like they almost didn't want us to process it. They just thought, like, okay, we have somewhere we're going in the near future. We need to get this out of the way tonight. So it is hard to know where they're going. And of the plethora of things that happened tonight, this is probably the lowest on the totem pole of things that I've mulled around. But I do think there is a lot of intrigue in doing something with Drake and Killian. And I'm spitballing here, but while after almost every single takeover, traditionally anyway, not before, you know, takeover became what it has become over the past couple. But traditionally I would look at the women's division and always go, oh man, I don't know how they get to the next one without doing, you know, a triple threat or a fatal four way. And of course they never do that. With the tag division, they have much more frequently done triple threats and fatal four ways. So I think that you probably could move the titles right over to GYV with that kind of situation. But I do think that whatever feud it is has to be built around Drake and Killian.
And you know, I get, okay, the triple threat thing works for me, especially if it's one from the McAfee, Burch and Lorcan, and then you've got Undisputed Era, and they basically both lose because of their predisposition with one another. So I guess that is a way to work this and get it to them. I do think that their first, I put a big match in air quotes, match against a named team will probably be with Ever-Rise because of what they did to Ever-Rise. Because otherwise they could have just had it been a singles wrestler that they beat down, but they had it be a tag team. So probably going to get a little something out of Ever-Rise. So maybe Ever-Rise will for a short time be the babyface, very low card gatekeepers. I don't know. I guess that's fine in the immediate future, but NXT moves at a pretty brisk pace of storytelling these days, so it's hard to say. Oh, and by the way, Tom, what this took place right after was the very strange Boa, Xia Li, and Cloaked Woman scene. That made it all the more jarring. But we will get to that.
My favorite note that I took for tonight's show was on that segment.
Oh, well, there's a little teaser.
And now it's not going to live up to the hype.
Right. Darrell, what else did you have tonight?
Okay. And yeah, talking about that scene, glad that y'all shoot on segue to that. That's been kind of weird and stuff, and I want to see where they go with it. The woman that they had in cloak looked in the eyes, looked like Xia Li, and I haven't heard anybody from their descent signing with NXT lately. So is that a way to repackage Xia Li? Since she didn't pass out like Bull when he marked his hand. Is this a way to repackage her? Is it when she was saying, well, I won't lose no more? Is this a way that they saying something took it over her? Because this is something different that NXT have done before, in a while anyway.
So a month ago, I would have said there's no way. But the way that this is going is so bizarre, it's really, really hard to say. I don't know of anybody obvious out there, any Chinese talent that's real obvious that could be in this position. So I guess the idea of it being another Xia is as good a guess as any. Tom, help me.
So my note was, after watching all of this play out, what I typed was, kind of trash, but I'm glad they're being honest about how she lives in a storage unit.
Okay.
I'm glad I paused for laughter at least. This was, well, it was kind of trash. It made me think of like the Dark Realm. Is that what it's called? The Dark Realm?
The Dark Order?
On Impact, the other.
Oh, okay.
It just, there is a supernatural feel to it, and not just, and of course there's the cinematic element to it as well, where it feels like the style of the show has completely changed for this one storyline. And I want to love it because it's Boa and Xia, and I want nothing but their success, but this is just bizarre and doesn't feel like it's on the same program. As far as who this is, Darrell, I like your theory because it's all the vibe of tonight's segment already put it in a place that just feels bizarre and like there's going to be some sort of supernatural element. So if it's, you know, evil Xia, shadow Xia, okay. As far as who else it could be, I do not know what her name is, but there was that one Chinese signee from their last Shanghai tryout where, again, I believe if memory serves, they signed four new people, one of whom was female. So it could be whoever that is. The only other people coming to mind are people I want to hesitate to say, but I don't know if I should because I don't know how WWE is approaching this storyline, because the only other people coming to mind are Japanese, not Chinese. And obviously this is a Chinese culture thing based around the two Chinese wrestlers that are on TV. And I'm like, okay, there are these rumors about Mako Satomura being signed to NXT UK. That didn't look like her eyes. There was the woman named Sari who was signed, but then her travel plans were affected by COVID. And WWE has allowed her to continue working in Japan while under contract to WWE. And as far as I know, she has yet to report to the Performance Center, but maybe that's her. But then that opens up the other thing of like, is this still supposed to be a Chinese culture thing? Or are we now branching over into the Yakuza? And it's just a whole Eastern Hemisphere thing. Or are we just not supposed to think about it? Because this is WWE we're talking about. Maybe they've just taken a Japanese wrestler and put her in this role. I don't know, but that's my short list of possibilities. The likelihood of which I have no idea how to gauge.
Nate, make sense of this.
I honestly, I wish I could. I think honestly, like I like the idea that Darrell has probably best here. Other than the signee that Tom's bringing up, I can't think of anybody that would be necessarily a Chinese wrestler. There's also the possibility that maybe it's not a Chinese wrestler. I don't know how they would necessarily do that or play that around, but, you know, I'm not, and I'm also not trying to imply that they would, you know, pull a Lord Tensai or a Yokozuna on us and tell us, you know, that they're actually one nationality when it's, you know, clear that they're not. So yeah, I don't know. It's bizarre. I'm intrigued. I wouldn't say it's my favorite storyline going on right now, but it definitely has me wondering. I'm not really sure. I really don't have a good answer.
I just figured it out, by the way.
Ah, okay. Help us.
Oh, God, why did I not figure this out like a second ago before I blabbed through all of that? Karen Q is still signed. I forgot about her because she's been injured for so long. She had a broken leg, and she's had it for so long. I'm sure she's better now. And she's awesome. She's better as a heel than she is as a babyface. She and Zaya had one of the better moments. It was a very brief match, but so I'll call it a moment. One of the better moments of the second Mae Young Classic. Yeah, it's Karen Q.
Okay. Well, sorry to blow that for everyone. But,
well, okay,
but
there
you
go.
Now we know. Darrell, do you have another one?
Okay. My next one will be, I see they're setting up a strap match for Cameron Grimes. So how do you guys like that, them doing this strap match? And how can they make this interesting?
So strap matches don't always deliver, but some are surprising. Every time we talk about strap matches, I reference the one between Steve Austin and Savio Vega that was very, very good. That was at one of the early In Your House shows. I don't know. I think that this one will work once again because of Grimes, because this is the perfect situation to force a guy like Grimes who runs all the time into, because he's going to try to run and there isn't going to be anything he can do. And once again, this is the kind of match that does kind of it works in whatever strength that Loomis does have. I think that the idea of him as just as a relentless, inescapable evil to his enemies is going to work for him. I don't know how you can continue to work Loomis as a week by week guy. But anyway, so this was because of the match Cameron Grimes versus Jake Atlas. Grimes goes over in 248 with the cave in. This didn't do Jake Atlas any favors, who had gained so much, I thought, potentially from his feud for the Cruiserweight Championship, only to just get crushed here and be an afterthought to another feud. Was there nobody else who could eat this pin? 248, and then Loomis threw the strap at him after showing him the video on the Tron. Grimes then, after commercial, shows up with Regal and says, "There's somewhere I've got to be." And Regal goes, "Yes, you've got to be here with me right now." And he puts him in the strap match. And then one of my favorite lines that I've seen, a lot of my favorite lines have involved Grimes lately, but Grimes goes, "Regal, why do you hate me so much?" And Regal goes, "Oh, well, I think it's probably your personality." Lovely. I love that. I just love it in general, but I love it coming out of the mouth of William Regal, and I will take as much Regal as you possibly want to give me, Tom.
I knew you were going to pick up on that line. If I hadn't liked the Tony Storm heel turn and the implications of it so much, this would have been the runaway best moment of the night. "Why do you hate me so much?" "Well," and then he pats him on the shoulder. Like, "Well, my boy, that'd be your personality." So I was thinking how little Dexter Loomis resides in my mind. I was thinking, "Oh, that was a nice little enhancement match for old Grimy there. Okay." And then right before Dexter Loomis pops up, I remember, oh, right, he's supposed to be in a feud with this other lump of clay. Reminder, these guys have no reason why they're feuding. They just kind of bumped into each other backstage, and Loomis decided he didn't like that. There is no reason.
Well, Grimey was upset that Loomis didn't say hello to him.
Oh,
and
God.
He says, nobody doesn't say hello to me, to old Grimey, as he likes to be called.
That's,
so there you go.
That's somehow worse. All right. Well, the Loomis character, yet again, is existing on two completely opposite ends of the character spectrum. He's stoic and sinister, but then he does this goofy caricature art, and now he edits it into little iMovies. This is, I still really think, like, okay, dude, it's so nice that if you wanted to, you know, work in Epcot Pavilion, in one of the Epcot Pavilions as a caricature artist, you could get the job. That's very nice, but it's not for a wrestling character. I'm all for using people's other talents in their characters, but this is not a match. It has not been a match. This was probably the worst night, the worst example of it yet, the best example of why it's not a match. And he pulls out the strap, and I think just like, they gimmicked the spin the wheel, make the deal. Did they just have all these laying around because somebody didn't think that they were gimmicking it, and now they want to use them? Before I remembered, okay, all right, Grimes does run away a lot, so that makes sense. It's weird that as far as I heard, they kind of left that unspoken. But then the whole segment ends with a close-up on Loomis, even dumber than the one from last week, staring right into the camera lens, and we're just supposed to believe that this is just his stoic, sinister stare, and he does not notice that there's a camera operator and a giant camera in his face. If that's going to be the new thing for Loomis, then they've found a way to make him even worse.
We also got an email from Kevin Catani that says, wowee, that was quite an episode. I thought there was a lot of great action. We got some developments for War Games. And how about that heel turn by Toni Storm? My two questions for tonight are, what do you think they're building Grimes for, or are they just keeping him warm until the North American Championship picture comes into focus? And after a good deal of build for several weeks, we've not seen Swerve and Adonis in some time. Any idea where they are? Thanks as always. Have a blessed Thanksgiving. And as always, office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. That's a really good question, where Swerve is, because Legado del Fantasma joked about it and said, I don't know, I think he's retired. So something's going on there with him and Adonis. And I think he and Adonis are still going to feud with the lackeys in Legado del Fantasma, and maybe Swerve will get back to that, to challenging there. I'm not quite sure. As for Grimey, it's a really good question, because I always think that he picks up a win, and then I say this guy seems tailor-made to play the Miz role of being champion, but always running out and just kind of escaping with his belt rather than winning to defend it, which is not really the NXT way, but it's a tried and true heel mechanism to build a decent championship reign. On Grimes versus Atlas and the strap match, Nate.
So Grimes versus Atlas, I enjoyed the match. These two guys are two guys that are, I'd say, more two of my favorite, like, rising stars. That's a better way to put it. Kind of rising stars, especially Atlas. I mean, he's kind of more, he's a little bit lower on the totem pole than Grimes at the moment. But both of these guys are two guys that like I really enjoy, you know, watching. So I felt like they had pretty good chemistry together. Very good chemistry together. So I really enjoyed the match. As far as like the Dexter Loomis stuff that kind of played into all of it towards the end, it's almost like Dexter Loomis's character, his gimmick, is giving people PTSD. Because if you remember Roddy, after a little while, like, you know, he got shoved in the locker or shoved in the trunk, and for a while he was like so afraid of like the trunk and Dexter Loomis and stuff. And now it's the same thing here with Grimes, and it's like, that's just kind of a weird gimmick, but sure, okay. Like, you know, I've said in the past, it's and I've compared him to Ridge Holland, and like a Ridge Holland light, and now it's like you take a Ridge Holland light and combined it with the very weird watered down version of only the Fiend, not even like the Bray Wyatt character. Although I guess actually maybe because you throw the characters in there and that's kind of like the Firefly Funhouse. It's a weird, weird amalgamation of a character. And I'm kind of starting to kind of like, what the hell are they doing? I'm not sure. It's bizarre. And I don't think in a good way. I'm all for trying something new, trying a bizarre character. I mean, hell, I don't know if we necessarily would have got Goldust that way. I don't know if we necessarily got Undertaker that way, or Kane, or Mankind, or, you know, things like that. I know that's a different era altogether, but I'm okay with trying things. But I don't know. It's weird. It was a few weeks ago that I said that I like taking real life talents and showcasing them on TV. And, you know, the few times that they have done the characters, like, it's been, I think they started to overdo it. Like the very first time he did it backstage, I forget, I think it was probably Undisputed Era, Roddy Strong. Actually, I think he was drawing them in a bus or something, if memory serves. And, you know, okay, fine, whatever. Like you incorporate it there. Maybe incorporate it one or two other times. But yeah, now taking it and morphing it into like these vignette, like childlike. It's just, I don't know. It's weird. And if the character is supposed to be like, okay, I'm going to do something awful to you and give you PTSD, and then I'm going to torment you over it, which is kind of what it seems like to me. That's, I don't know. It's a little bit messed up. Just kind of saying. So I don't know. Weird. But I kind of spoke about Dexter Lumis a little bit longer than I expected there. As far as where I think Cameron Grimes goes, yeah, that was the email. Cameron Grimes, where his kind of going next. I think they're probably just trying to keep him warm for now. Because I mean, yeah, there can only be so many people feuding for belts and titles and things at a time. I really like the idea of him kind of having that sort of a Miz type of a run. We've talked about that in the past too. Like, you know, barely narrowly escaping. Maybe he's got some sort of a lackey. I was watching a thing about Chris Jericho today talking about Ralphus. So I don't know, maybe he could get like a Ralphus or something. That would be sweet. I'd be entertaining. But yeah, like some sort of a lackey that might help him win and, you know, something like that. I don't know. But even as is, I think he could just kind of narrowly escape with the win and whatever. So I'd be all for him, you know, getting a North American title run once this particular kind of feud is, that's already going on between Priest and Gargano and Ruff and all that. Once that kind of comes to a head and wraps up and all that, I wouldn't mind seeing him get a shot. So that's what I got to say about that.
And all right. To jump off of the email to just get another segment out of the way, I thought that Legado del Fantasma video was so staged. Like, I've got nothing against heels just hanging out and talking each other up, reminding each other of things that they already know about one another, but just to make themselves feel better. And we've seen it just recently. You know, there, we can think about particularly the McMahon-Helmsley era is what first comes to mind when I think of that. You know, although not the earliest example, that's just what I think of first. But most recently, the Undisputed Era does that a lot. But this was so staged. I did not care for this incarnation of Legado del Fantasma cinematic backstage segment, not backstage, but, you know, segments. And, you know, the good doctor mentions Ashanti the Adonis, who I was liking in the two appearances that we saw from him under that name. I thought that he felt like the most modern thing, like very, very suddenly, like the most modern thing that NXT had. And then he just disappeared. I'm okay with Swerve going to the background for now, because his feud with Escobar, that's what it is. It has been feeling like old news. But then, as part of this segment, they just go like, oh yeah, and this Chris Stallion guy, ha 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 ha. And I'm like, what? Who the heck is Chris Stallion? What are
it's
you
so
talking
weird.
About?
It was
so weird. Yeah, they say Chris Stallion, then Kurt Stallion, and it says Kurt Stallion on the screen, and I'm just like, okay, well, is this your giveaway? And writers out there, okay, never ever have a character tell another character something they already know. There's a better way to write it. There always is. Don't have a character say something that they don't. They've made fun of that on The Simpsons, where they go somewhere and he goes, "Oh well, I can't believe we're finally here at this symposium." And they're like, "Yeah, we all talked about it before we got here, Dad. You don't have to establish that." These guys have a genuine cool factor to them. Don't deaden that with some on the nose writing. Darrell, we've kept you waiting. If you've got one more, go ahead. If not, we'll run for the exit here.
Okay. And with that, just coming on what you guys are talking about Phantasma's group, I think they're still setting up for the potential between him and the UK Cruiserweight champion, Jordan Devlin. So I think that's something that they're going to try to set up, and that could be something that they could start maybe at War Games and go at the Rumble, take over at the Rumble, which would be next month. So just to see. So hopefully they set that up and get at a nice long bill. But my last question for you guys would be, I love what they did with Leon Rush in the beginning and how him and Kevin Owens reacted. And Kevin Owens was making him feel a little sympathetic, and then he almost went to going overzealous with it when he tried to celebrate, but then he was like, okay. And that things like that. I like what they did with that segment right there. What do you guys see with this going? And just to throw it also on this, will my boy get a NXT title match since he just had that match with Timothy Thatcher? But those are my two things, and I'll let you guys go.
All right, Darrell, we thank you as always. I will say on the Cruiserweight Championship, you say you hope they have a good long build to Escobar and Devlin. I will say I dare say they need it because they are both despicable heels, so they got to find a way to I think the less turnable of the two is Devlin. There's just something so thoroughly despicable about him that he's so good at that. Now, granted, I can't compare it to his face act because I've never seen his face act, but it just doesn't seem like it would make sense to me. But I've been wrong before based on the fact that I just hadn't seen somebody on the other side of the aisle. And he is the one with a legitimate beef because his championship was taken away from him. Anyway, KO show. So Kevin Owens introduces Leon Ruff. He talks to him. He tries to fire him up and says, "Hey, don't paint a target on your back." Lots of fourth wall breaking in this, and they only got away with it because Owens is so, so good. Gargano came out, obviously, and then Priest came out. And finally, Kevin Owens says it's too bad that we don't have Teddy Long out here, because he would come out here and he would say, "All right, it's going to be Leon Ruff versus Johnny Gargano versus Damian Priest in a triple threat match." So William Regal came out and said that exact thing. And then he turned back and said, "Playa," which chef's kiss. That was very funny stuff. It's subtle and yet witty in the way that Tom and I get to hear a lot of William Regal right now, because he does a lot of the announcing 8 years back. He's been off for like 5 or 6 weeks on NXT 8 years back, but we hope that he's back soon because he's one of the things we really love about the show. I'm going to quick read JB's email. It's JB from Detroit. "This entire Ruff Gargano angle has had a very main roster feel to me and left a somewhat bad taste in my mouth. I actually really like Ruff, but I agree with Tom's assessment from last week in that there was no true build to this fluke title win with a long history of jobbing and becoming a fan favorite. One thing I always loved about NXT is that their titles always felt of very high importance and prestige because the reigns always seemed to be strong and generally lasted longer than they do on the main roster. I felt especially as recently the prestige has been diminished a bit and it has greatly been personified by the Ruff Gargano shtick. I don't think it helps that the angle has a bad comedy feel to me, which is another main roster trope that I hate. As always, love the show and go VIP."
some of that I'm with. I do think there was enough build to this. Ruff took a bunch of losses, 6 or 7 TV losses. I think if he had taken 20, 50, 100 TV losses leading to this, people would be much more annoyed that had happened. And I don't think they have. I don't think they would keep somebody around the PC for that long to do that many jobs before doing it. They can't tell that story otherwise. The shortened title reigns, I think that's not so much a thing that's happening right now, but that started happening when they went to 2 hours and went to USA. We knew that having that much more time to fill, there was going to have to be more championship matches, which necessitates more championship turns. I loved this segment. I loved all the parts of it. I thought that Ruff acquitted himself really well again here and came off as pretty likable. KO did his part in trying to kind of he turned off the sarcasm just long enough to try to build up Ruff here. And then he got under Gargano's skin a little and we set up this triple threat. And lo and behold, unbelievably, Leon Ruff is going to be in a championship match as the incoming champion at TakeOver. And what I really like about this match is I feel like there are really strong cases for all three to win. I don't know that I take a lot of issue with anybody who's got issues with this storyline, but I love it, and to hell with them, Tom.
Owens was pointing out wrestling formula throughout the night on commentary, which was quite enjoyable. I thought it was a novel approach. You wouldn't want it every single week, but as a guest appearance, I thought that was fine. And he was fine in this segment, but I will make up for my opera tangent by simply saying that this just felt like another week of them trying to retroactively tell the story that they failed to tell before this storyline's biggest moment, which of course was Ruff's win of his attaining the belt. That's already passed, but now they're trying to tell us who he is. I will at least say that I get that part of the point of this is that we didn't know as much about him beforehand. And so now the television program is scrambling after the fact to be like, oh, wow, we didn't think he was going to become a champion, so we didn't spend much time on him. But now let's find out who he is. But then it all just fell flat for me. I nothing about the segment worked. I know I'm going to be in the minority there because I know just looking at social media and the emails and your response, I know that this was very popular, but I just thought it fell flat and did nothing for me other than what last week already confirmed, that yes, we're moving toward a triple threat.
David Podnar also emailed us, I love the entire KO show segment. I know many may dislike breaking the fourth wall feel with the extra chair and waiting for the Titantron. I'm old, and that's what I'm calling it, for the entrances, but Kevin did such a great job. Yes, this may be the main rostering of NXT, but I think we can make an exception for KO. Also, Regal's playa was so spot on. Holla holla, playas. Dave Podnar from Pittsburgh. I'm somebody who's not abide breaking the fourth wall ever, because it is something that lazy writers, and I'll say young writers, do because they think they're being novel. It's not novel, but there is a way to do it with aplomb, and Kevin Owens is your man. As you said, you can't have it every week. For me, my favorite Kevin Owens moment of the night was something with the women, and there was a near pin and it didn't happen, and Raquel Gonzalez had her hands in her head, and he goes, oh, you can tell she's frustrated because she put her hands in her head to show frustration.
Yeah.
Like, he literally made fun of bad acting, which to me was beautiful, because nobody freaking does that when they're frustrated. It's not a thing. It's just a TV thing.
He did the same thing with Indy who is it? Vic Joseph sitting there. I can't tell him apart. He says something about like, oh, and Indy is still reeling from that forearm she took. And Kevin's like, oh yeah, you can tell because she's holding her face.
loved it. I know that it can't be forever. But when he retires, I hope that he does something like this forever and they reel him into the level that they need him. Nate on the KO show.
I personally loved the KO show. I loved all the meta stuff. And like you guys said, you know, typically that fourth wall stuff, it could either be lazy writing. It doesn't come off. He pulled it off great. You know, it's like, hey, you know, I know the KO show well enough to know. And then boom, points to the Titantron. And, you know, yeah, some timing issues or whatever there. But hey, that's the production guy, not him. I really liked all that. I liked what this is all set up. It did, you know, obviously I wasn't on the show last week, but, you know, in watching the show earlier today because, nothing like waiting until the last minute, watching last week's show today. It did kind of feel like that might be what they were going to be setting up for, some sort of a triple threat. And, you know, here we are. But I wasn't expecting them to give a little bit more light on Leon Ruff like this. I was hoping they would, but I don't know. I kind of didn't think they would. I think this kind of thought that he was kind of just playing a pawn in this larger story, but I'm also glad that they're doing it because I mean, he seems like he's, you know, just genuinely happy to be in the ring and be there. He can work. So I mean, I don't know, shine a little bit more of a spotlight on him and see what happens. Yeah, I think he pulled off his stuff really well tonight. Even like when he got just kind of like he grabbed the title, he stood up, and that's when he shouted. I think it was Gargano's name, and then Gargano came out. It was over the top. It was meant to be over the top, but then he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, my bad. Like I shouldn't have done that." And you know, it was just these small little cool like character things that I don't think are completely refined yet. You can tell he's green, but I don't know. I roll with it. You know, it let somebody, I don't know, just kind of let somebody grow and develop naturally. See what happens. It kind of works. So like you said, I think we can, I forget which one of you guys said this. I think William McKelly, but you know, you can make a case for all three of these guys to win. You know, Gargano to kind of like reclaim reclaim the belt and then hopefully defend it more than once. And you know, kind of lose that stigma around him. Damian Priest would be, you know, two-time champion. He just recently lost it there. So, as did Gargano. You know, I could certainly see him holding it. He's a very strong champion. I could see somebody that, you know, he's somebody that I could see the company wanting to have that belt around, you know, the shoulder, around waist, whatever. But then I could kind of also see Leon Ruff holding it. And, you know, whether it be a fluke win or a legit win or what have you, a triple threat, you know, opens up a lot of doors, including it's a no disqualification step more than likely. So who knows? We'll see, but I'm not normally one for a main roster type angle like this in NXT. And, you know, and I talked about it earlier, I'm not also one for like hotshotting titles and things, especially in NXT where they've never really done it before. But I'm kind of giving this one a pass because it's entertaining. I don't want them to do stuff like this all the time. I don't want to see hot potato like the 90s with the titles, late 90s, early 2000 titles. But, you know, something like this I'm okay with.
All right. I'm going to put some stuff together because last week we went like 80 minutes and I really liked that feel. And I think people did in general because we had a lot of more streams last week as a result. Well, perhaps as a result. Okay, so we had Adam Cole. He did a promo with the rest of Undisputed Era in the ring. Tom has long said that when Adam Cole decided that he was going to be babyface, he could be the biggest babyface on the roster. And he started to show some of that here with some real babyface fire in a promo. Would be even more so if he didn't have three guys by his side. The only thing I'll say right here is that they could have split up Undisputed Era, and I wonder if they didn't solely so they could get them into this War Games match before they decided to do that. It's a big question I have, and I still think it's possible that these guys could split, and I just wonder if War Games had anything to do with it. We had Johnny Gargano playing Santa
along with his wife in order to with Candice LeRae in order to hawk WWE merchandise. We had Pete Dunne and the tag team champions in a segment backstage. Pete Dunne actually spoke for the first time in a while. Finn Balor told us to stop playing in the kitty litter because the cat's back. And we also had McKenzie catch up with the Garganos and Indy outside, and then they got into a car, and Ghostface was in there. You kind of got to suspend disbelief, because why is he playing Ghostface at this point when he wouldn't know that he was going to be on TV? But it did lead at least to the character Vic. You know, they need Vic to be dumb, and he does it well. He says, well, there are two ghost faces. And Kevin says, oh, yeah, yeah, because he's sitting next to Andy, so that's pretty obvious. Just doing that that Kevin Owens thing. Didn't have to make fun of Vic there, but he did. And I love him for it. So before we get to the one other match we have, that's just kind of a rundown of the segments we didn't cover, Tom.
I think the Gargano stuff is the only stuff I haven't really touched on yet. I didn't mind the Gargano's hawking WWE shop Christmas stuff. Is this the first time we've seen it on NXT? Like, we talk about NXT becoming quote unquote main roster, and I'm like, well, there's the most egregious example we've gotten yet.
You know, the Gargano of 4 months ago couldn't do this. But the Gargano of now is the exact person to do it.
They got away with it for that reason. And amidst, like, hey, parents, buy your kids WWE stuff, you know, a segment geared around that, he turns around and points at a Tegan Knox shirt and says, oh, hey, you tore her ACL.
Just God.
So that was another highlight of the night. And then, yes, it was just weirdly inconsequential that this reveal of a second ghost face that we knew was coming was just like, oh, and he's sitting in the back seat. I mean, I would laud the creativity of the reveal, like you and I recently saw on a Raw Rebound on our NXT 8 years back adventure. The reveal of Paul Heyman being aligned with CM Punk was done very similarly, but there was consequence to it. This was just like, we just decided that we were going to do it this week. I just can't imagine that. I don't know. You would think that you would want the ghost face to interfere on Johnny's behalf in some consequential way that's more shocking, to be like, but wait, Indy Hartwell was already unmasked. And then we wonder, but no, it's just like, oh, okay, there's a second one. Scanning back through real quick, I think that was, yeah, I mean, everything else that I have notes on, I either already touched on, apart from the Thatcher Kushida match. So I think that's it.
Yeah, we kind of surfed around all that. Anything on those segments, Nate?
I'll be completely honest with you. No, nothing that we already haven't covered or Tom didn't just bring up.
I guess, you know, with the Finn video, it at least confirms, again, what we already pieced together from last week, but it at least confirms that indeed Finn is watching the War Games match, looking for who's going to try to come after him next. And seems like that much more of a tip off that his next big challenger is going to be McAfee.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me that it seems like Finn has said that he's staying around and he's champion, but they have not explicitly have anyone say that. And it seems like it's still just a just in case sort of thing where they can back away from that if they want to. The one other match was Kushida versus Timothy Thatcher. This went 12:32. Kushida goes over in what you would expect to be and what was an extremely technical match between these two. Kushida wins. I mean, it was clean. Timothy Thatcher got spooked because Tommaso Ciampa got off of his chair. Tommaso Ciampa came out and watched the match from the ramp for a while, the foot of the ramp, so he was close. And then he just kind of all of a sudden got up and threw his chair, seemingly in a rage, for apropos of nothing.
And Thatcher got spooked. Kushida put on the hoverboard lock, and that was that. Kushida wins clean. A couple things here. Thatcher's wonderful, and a match with Tommaso Ciampa is going to be wonderful. But Thatcher is playing the role that Cassius Ohno was playing not that long ago, where he was a heel gatekeeper who basically never won. Thatcher gets a little more than Ohno did, but not a lot more, because the results are not there. He's not beating anyone. So the question is, what does Tommaso Ciampa, arguably the face of NXT, what does he gain from a win over Timothy Thatcher, which he will get? I don't know. The other question is, what does Kushida get from this? Because it seems like Kushida doesn't rise based on wins, and he doesn't go any lower based on losses. He's been winning a lot since he came back this last time, but it seems like he's winning matches and they're keeping him warm, but not totally figuring him in, Tom.
The match itself, I really wish that I loved this match, because I've been so critical of the breakneck pace that NXT has been at. So you put these two guys together to work a technical match, and I wish that I had loved it. I thought it was just okay. But this is the pace that I prefer. I thought the wrestling tonight was good and more in line with the wrestling that I like to see from NXT. So the past 2 weeks have been all right with that. So I do wish that I could just gush all over this. But it is weird, though. You mentioned last week how this is like the babyface and the heel who are both working get off my lawn gimmicks, and Ciampa is immediately going for the other get off my lawn guy, when it seems like it would have made more sense for him to go through a couple of other people first before then, you know, just have them each doing the same thing on different sides of the ledger. Ciampa against heels, Thatcher against faces, before culminating. But there's not much intrigue here, I don't think, other than just wondering how good is the match going to be that they end up putting together, especially after seeing Thatcher lose. You know, not that you really want him to lose not that you'd really want Kushida to lose, but it was, again, like you said, Ciampa did not interfere. He just intimidated Thatcher with his presence. So the only thing I'm then grasping onto is that for the first time, they showed us who are supposed to be all of Thatcher's students sitting backstage watching his match. And they're the ones that we've already seen their faces. Austere Gray.
August Gray.
Yeah.
Austere Gray. August Gray.
And the other dude whose name I forgot. And then Denzel is sitting.
Was it Denzel? Okay.
Yeah. They changed his name. I don't remember what they changed it to. Cal Bloom is sitting in the back. They haven't shown his face in these segments before, but we knew that he was the one that Thatcher was stretching before these segments hit the ring. So since they're showing us those guys' faces, it makes me wonder if the ones who it's murky, because we've just seen some of them revolt against Thatcher. But they're still. So I wonder if they get involved in some way after now we've seen Thatcher lose twice in a, I don't know. It just, Thatcher just seems like a loser right now. So there just seems like there's very little intrigue into seeing him go up against someone the stature of Ciampa. So I'm wondering if these Thatch Can students are going to play a role.
This reminds me, Tom, of when we were talking about Ohno, where he'd win a couple of enhancement matches, and we're like, oh, what are they going to do with him? Like, what's a push? And then it's like, oh, no, they need somebody to beat him for it to have meaning.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening with him. Tommaso Ciampa, Tom, you know who get off my lawn Tommaso Ciampa in a perfect world would be going after first? Kona Reeves.
Oh, man, where's Kona been?
Oh, that would be perfect for both of them.
He was one of the people who was not wearing a mask during that optional mask period. So I don't know.
I know we kind of lost
a joke here.
Yep. Oh well, but that would be one of the characters who seems like he would be ripe for that.
That would be delicious.
Yes, Kushida versus Thatcher, Mr. Nate.
I enjoyed the match in terms of like its technical prowess and things like that. You know, you'd kind of expect something like this out of both Kushida and Thatcher. So like as far as like the performance and everything, I certainly enjoyed it. I also liked Ciampa coming down here and, you know, inserting himself just kind of stoically sitting there in the chair, watching the whole thing. You kind of added that little mystique to the match. Like, what's going to happen? When is he going to flip out? When's he going to do something? I certainly like that. It looks like obviously a Thatcher and Ciampa feud is kind of next on the horizon here. And I mean, I'm down. Thatcher is obviously he's got, you know, that the grappling style, the technical style there, but I feel like he could probably go in a pretty good brawl with Ciampa, who can also, wrestle technically as well. So I'm on board with it. I'm 100% on it. I really can't think of anything more to say that you guys already have it. I'm not going to lie.
All right. We have one more email. This is from Jack Argyle. And I will take a big breath because he wrote it all as one long paragraph. Hey guys, hope you're all doing great. Enjoyed listening to you, Kelly, on Wrestling Night in America. Some great insight, as usual. Wanted to carry on what Tom has been saying about NXT hot-shotting angles and coming at a breakneck speed. I've actually enjoyed the last 2 weeks of shows, but I get where Tom is coming from. I watched AEW the first few months, but quickly grew tired of the tag matches having no rules and no psychology in the matches. I grew tired of Chris Jericho constantly taking shots and not a big fan of Jericho outside of wrestling. That's not to say there were no high points. I love Jon Moxley and Darby Allin. I think NXT needs to slow down, leave more time between takeovers, and I definitely feel like Io and Rhea should have been left for December takeover, seeing as it doesn't look like Rhea is moving to Raw right away, judging on this week. I guess what I just want is long-term booking. I know it's been tough with the injuries to Karrion Kross and Finn Balor and losing Keith Lee rather quickly, but I want them to sort out the upper mid card. I feel like the group of Kushida, Bronson Reed, Dexter Lumis, Cameron Grimes, and Dream have traded wins back and forth for a long time, and it started to really muddy the waters for me to see any of them jump out and challenge for the NXT title. What do you guys think? Also, just wanted to ask you guys thoughts on the rumor going around that Aleister Black asked Vince if he could return to NXT. I'm a huge fan of Black and think him coming back to NXT could be huge. I know Vince looks like he isn't giving up power until he passes, but I've seen Zelina Vega even going back a few weeks or so, always complimentary about her relationship working with Triple H and NXT. Makes me wonder not just for Aleister and Zelina, but for more talent that wants returns to NXT who aren't being used. Why does it affect Vince, who's working in NXT? I highly doubt ever since AEW took control in the ratings that Vince has cared much about NXT and can't even see him watching the show. I hope Triple H can get Aleister back. He went a year undefeated in singles wrestling, and when he eventually lost, nobody mentioned a thing. The mystique of the character got watered down to a point where he was just another member of the roster who had cool entrance music. Where do you guys think Aleister would fit in around NXT? He's good enough to just drop right into the main event scene, but I wouldn't be opposed if he kicked Dream's head off for good. Dexter Lumis, if turned heel, could be a good way to reintroduce the mystique of Aleister Black. What do you guys think? Cheers, guys. Keep the fantastic work up. Jack A. from Swansea, Wales. P.S. Kelly, did you say something on Wrestling Night in America that you were on IMDb as a listed credit in any shows? I am, but you have not seen those shows unless you live in the Pacific Northwest, which I know you do not since you live in Wales. I was on a show called Meet Virginia that was named after the song, and it was about a guy who fell in love for the first time, finally at age 35 or 40, and then fell in love with another woman later in the day. And it's about his issues with the fact that he's finally found love for the first time and he found it twice on the same day, blah, 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 blah. And, it wasn't bad. I was one of the writers, so I dare say, at times it was good, but, although I was kind of green at the time, we did not. We ended up getting a pilot, and they aired a few in the Pacific Northwest. They are impossible to find, and that's fine because it's really green and I don't need anybody to see it. But they're pretty tough to find. And we didn't end up getting picked up. We were going to be picked up by, God, it's been a long time. I think it was NBC. But they didn't because they had another show that was really, really similar to it in tone and casting. I didn't know what it was. I didn't watch network sitcoms at the time, and I still don't because most of them are terrible. And all I know is that the showrunner of Meet Virginia told me not long after, he was like, that show only lasted like 3 weeks and then it got axed. And I never knew whether to be mad that we got bumped and their show only lasted 3 weeks, or relieved that we could have been in the spot where we could have been axed in 3 weeks. But yes, if you look on IMDb, you can find me, Kelly Wells, as Kelly Wells 2. You do not want to look up Kelly Wells 1. She is a porn actress, and you will be mortified at the titles of her films. I am Kelly Wells 2. Anyway, you had an email. Aleister Black, I don't know where he slots at this point. We can't just look at NXT as a place to kick the tires again, but I do think he would do better there. It seems like he was more respected, and I don't know why you don't do something a little more with him on the main roster. Nate?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he was very well respected, very well received in NXT. I wasn't watching NXT for the most part when he was champ, but every once in a while I'd tune in, or I pretty much kept up with takeovers for the most part. And I mean, I thought he was a strong champ personally. You know, anyway, again, I wasn't keeping up with the brand, but at least that's what I took away from it at the time. I loved his entrance. Which they've, you know, seemingly taken away from him. I just loved everything about NXT Aleister Black. You know, I've always been drawn to kind of that like dark type of a character. Anyway, like, to be honest with you, like, you know, Aleister Black, if you made him a little bit taller, would have been like probably exactly what I would have created in any wrestling video game like 10, 12, 15 years ago. So like he's certainly somebody that I like, and I feel like they could, you know, they didn't really do a whole lot with on the main roster, especially after, you know, the whole eye thing. And at least last I saw him on the main roster, he was still like covering his eye, and then took off the eye covering to show like, oh, nope, I, you know, Rollins didn't actually poke my eye out. But, anyway, I wouldn't mind seeing him come back to NXT. A feud with Dexter Lumis in like his current state, I mean, I guess could kind of work, as you know, we were talking about earlier, like, you know, at least the way I'm going with it is his gimmick is to give people PTSD, and that's kind of dark and sinister. And you know, Aleister Black is kind of dark and sinister. So I guess that could work. But, you know, as I've said, I'm kind of souring on Lumis, not necessarily on his in-ring work, just on the character itself and lack, you know, kind of lack of facials because of the character, yada, yada, broken record, talk about this every week. But, yeah, I wouldn't mind necessarily seeing that. I don't know who else had, nobody else, like, at the top of my head screams, like, perfect Aleister Black opponent, unless they were to, like, slot him right in with somebody like Ciampa. I could see that being kind of cool. Potentially Grimes or Priest if, you know, they wanted to put him more on that level, not necessarily like, you know, an A plus or S, well, not necessarily S tier, but A plus level, like, you know, some of the higher up guys on the card, but, certainly wouldn't, you know, wouldn't scoff at seeing him coming back. I am, also trying to locate where I put my cell phone so I could pick up and read the rest of that email, but I have a wireless headset and I've been pacing around my house and I don't know what happened to it. Was there anything else to that email that I need to address?
I would not necessarily say so. Okay. Most of it was about Aleister slotting in. He talked about the breakneck speed of the show, but we talk about that a lot about throughout the show. So
I didn't think so, but I couldn't remember, and I didn't know where the hell I put my phone.
Well, Tom, go ahead.
Well, I will start off by saying that today I learned mortified must mean something very, very different from what I thought it meant.
allured, you will be, I mean, amused also. I wish I could say some of her movie titles on this show, because
it's just imagine that one scene from Clerks with Randall listing off.
God, I love that movie.
Yeah. So there's a very, very, very tiny list of people that I would like to see return to NXT, or whom I think could return to NXT without it seeming like, okay, they're just letting everybody come back and this isn't special. Special isn't exactly the word I'm looking for, but suffice to say. And I think Alistair is on the list. Just to put it succinctly, he's never been my favorite, but I've always seen the potential in him. Yet another call up that it's just like, man, they didn't really have anything for him. It's too bad, because there's just a ton of potential there. And I think that he would absolutely fit if they made that switch back to black and gold for him. So that could work out if that was the thing that was going to happen. Does Vince watch NXT? I'm sure that he does not, even now with it on USA. I'm sure that that has not changed. But does Vince care about NXT? I'm sure he does, insofar as it is a line item in his quarterly shareholder calls. So there is at least that, which sort of pertains to the very little that I can add, because indeed, Kelly, we talk about NXT's pacing lately all the time, so there's not too much that I can add without repeating myself to that conversation. But I will say that even though I'm not looking at the minute by minutes, and I'm not part of these strategy meetings to know exactly how what numbers, what statistics have driven them to decide to fundamentally change their approach to this show that has been critically acclaimed for 8 years or so. I'll just say 8 years or so, and leave it as a subtle plug for our VIP show. All I can say is that the only time that it has succeeded in the ratings, which seems to be the goal here, is in these gimmick shows like gimmick is not the word I'm looking for. The named shows like Great American Bash and Halloween Havoc. So fine. But I really, we're not seeing a difference in the numbers week to week. It doesn't seem like more people are tuning over from AEW or tuning into NXT as new viewers because the show is so different all of a sudden. So I do long for them to return to doing, again, like I always do, using their own words, focusing on themselves and running the marathon, not the sprint. But it seems like they are not focusing on themselves. They're focusing on their competition, and that they are trying to sprint and not save their breath for the marathon. So yes.
The only other thing on the show was a promo saying that that the official song for this takeover is War Pigs by Black Sabbath, and Vic made a point to tell us that this is on the album Paranoid, which is available now on Spotify. Is it, Vic? Is an album that is celebrating its 50th anniversary available on Spotify? It is.
In his defense, I don't think it was, because the War Pigs that I have in my playlist is not Black Sabbath, and I don't think I could get it.
Shut up, Nate.
I'm just saying.
Nate, stop it. You and your fact stating. War Pigs.
One of the reasons why I have Apple Music.
Is 50 years old. I have Tidal, and I promise you, I have Black Sabbath Paranoid already. If you have not heard Black Sabbath's Paranoid, you should, because
amazing.
Given all the douche rock that they normally promote as a brand, as WWE, you're really going to – a palate cleanser would be Paranoid, which is a wonderful album. Okay. So with that, yeah, my name is Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. You can go VIP and you can listen to me and Tom talk all kinds of fun about NXT 8 years back. This coming week, we're going to be talking about a semi-strange week with Xavier Woods with his first ever TV win. Emma made her TV debut, and for some reason, Team Hell No defended their tag team championships on an episode of NXT, even though they're not NXT tag team champions. So interesting stuff going on there as the Shield gets going 8 years back. Tom, who are you?
Yep. Follow me at Tom Stout. There have been some very, very weird NXT episodes lately that we've been covering on that Saturday drop. That is the next time, I believe, unless I get a surprise call, that is the next time you will hear me on the Torch airwaves. And then I will talk to you on this same line Sunday night with Greg Parks on Wrestling Night in America.
And I was on Wrestling Night in America a couple of weeks ago, so listen to that, because we talked about the upcoming Survivor Series and tried to make sense of it, and now it's happened, and we're still trying to make sense of it. Nate, who are you?
I am at Nate Lindberg on Twitter, and I write the NXT hits and misses. I apologize, because last week there wasn't one. Maybe I will decide to write one and post it up after the fact, but I've got one written up, and I will actually be posting it probably within the next 5 or 10 minutes, because tomorrow is Thanksgiving. And hey, I have no idea how the heck my day is going to go tomorrow. But hey, guys, happy Thanksgiving.
Indeed. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. And I thought that was going to segue into something, but it didn't. So we end not with a bang, but a whimper. And we will see you in